All right, welcome back to the Bible class debrief. Tim and Micah just finished teaching 7th and 8th graders. What lessons did we cover this week?
We did 1.6 and 1.7, so we're covering the temptation of Eve and then the broken relationships that fall out of that for Adam and Eve.
All right. Well, this is obviously, you know, critical background information to the entire story. And you guys crammed it all into a 45-minute class. What were the challenges of selecting material here? This is all of Genesis 3. So what were the challenges of selecting material here? Almost all of Genesis 3. What did you highlight? What did you have to pass over quickly? How'd that work out for you?
I think one of the things that was a bit of a challenge was connecting Eve going away from an attitude of gratitude. That rhymes. I feel like there's a better way to say that. An attitude of thanksgiving towards God, kind of connecting that with her believing the lies of the serpent. And it helped to kind of have the Romans passage in my head because I'm also reading Tim's apologetics book, and so it kind of connected, but I think for the kids it definitely took some explaining, like, why that was the case. So I say that was probably
why that was the case, that gratitude was an underlying problem for Eve. Yeah, this would be a new concept. I think the way kids mostly learn about the fall is kind of oversimplified, you know?
Right, yeah.
Eve was tempted and it looked so desirable. That's all true, but it doesn't really cut to the heart of her relationship with God. Did you get into that as well, Tim?
Yeah. So the way I sell this to the kids is we play act it. So I just sort of monologue my way through it. So, you know, the serpent rolls up because they're used to hearing it in Bible-ese, and there are calluses there, and they don't hear it like real people. So the serpent rolls up and goes, wow, look at all these trees and all this fruit. This is amazing. God really won't let you eat any of it? And we talk through, like, what's he doing? Well, that makes God sound really stingy, right? Yeah. Well, and then and she just answers the question, right? Oh, no, 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 no. We can eat all of this except that one. Oh, that one. God won't let you eat that. That's interesting. That's just like him. I tell you, that guy. He knows when you eat that one, you'll be like him. It's not going to kill you, girl. He's just trying to keep it for himself.
So it sounds like what you're doing is drawing out what's behind the text, or what is going on, what the serpent's aim is with his deception, beyond just the direct conversation that's recorded with Eve, which I think is a challenge here, is that we're used to reading stories with so much, you know, when it comes to dialogue, everything is right on the surface, especially with children's or young adult literature. You read a little piece of dialogue, and not only do you get the actual dialogue between the characters, but what is going on in the mind, you know, of the main character. And here you don't get any of that. You just get the story recorded or the dialogue recorded in very short form.
Right. Well, and we know a little bit more than this because we know from later commentary on it, like, Paul comes back and validates. Eve says the serpent deceived me and I ate. But I mean, do you believe people after they sin? Oh, I was tricked. But Paul comes back and validates that.
Right.
Says, no, she was deceived. Adam sinned with his eyes open, but she was deceived. So we know that she was deceived. What does it mean to read this like he really tricked her? So he set a framing that calls God's generosity into question. And then we're having a conversation about whether God is stingy. And that's the framing for the whole conversation. And by the time we get to her thought process, I mean, how does she know that it's pleasant to the eyes? She's looking at it, direct sense data, right? Mm-hmm. How does she know that it's good for food? She hasn't tasted it yet. Logical induction. It looks like all the other things that are good for food. Why wouldn't it be?
Right. There are no poisonous fruits in the garden other than this one.
As it turns out. How does she know that it's desirable to make one wise? Well, she got that one straight from the devil. but also, he wasn't lying, actually, about that part.
Right.
So we get this blend of, you know, he gets her off in the corner and she's no longer focused on what God said. She's no longer focused on what she knows about God. This whole conversation has been framed as a question about whether God is stingy or not. And we're having this conversation off in a corner away from God. God's not involved in the conversation. We're talking about God with the devil. Bad idea. He was good at this the first time out, and he's only gotten better since.
Yeah.
And she loses her focus. We know what her thought process is. You know, reason says it's going to be good to eat. It looks good. And, you know, apparently it's good for wisdom. Like, there's a fourth thing missing there, which is also it's going to kill me. if we put that back in, she doesn't eat it. And, you know, this is a thank you, God, that, you know, you gave me that instruction, because my reason and my sense experience by themselves would have led me to eat it. But she loses that in the course of the discussion. She loses track of it. And so I'm trying to sell them the conversation in a way where they see how someone could lose track of what God gave them.
Right.
And be tricked. Because we know she was tricked.
Yeah. And that, Micah, that sounds like the challenge you were having as well is, how did you kind of bring that out to the students, the gratitude thing?
We kind of went through the story as well and talked about how the enemy is trying to get her to believe that what God said actually wouldn't be the best for them. And I tried to kind of tie that to modern day temptations. Like, that often is the temptation that we have. Like, we think that I know God said this thing was sin, but right now it kind of seems like if I did this, it would just make my life better. So maybe like God doesn't really know what's best for me in this situation. Like, we probably don't completely think that through necessarily, but that's kind mm-hmm. of like subconsciously the thought. So we talked about how that is kind of her thought there. Like, rather than being thankful to God for all the things that he's made, she's thinking, well, maybe God doesn't actually know what's best for me in this situation. So, yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. So moving on. That kind of takes us through the dialogue and what Eve's main problems were. What did we get into next? I guess the hiding from God aspect.
Well, and Adam eating it.
Right.
I don't think I sold this one part particularly well. My guys in particular had trouble seeing, like, what's Adam's problem? Like, if he's not tricked, he's sinning with his eyes open. What is his deal? Like, he's got 23 more ribs. Like, why? And I tried to, like, we're walking back, recapping God walking Adam through naming the animals. Hey, look, they come in sets of two. There's nobody for you, buddy. Aw. And then he gets her, and this is literally the only woman in the world for him. And here she comes with a fruit in her hand and juice running down her chin, and it's too late. What do you do? And it did not hit. I think my girls got it. The guys were just like, what's the problem?
What grade are you teaching to?
Eighth grade. They're supposed to be getting this by now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they haven't had a crush yet. I don't know.
I know for a fact that one of them are in my youth group, and I can say they definitely have.
There's something about that that just didn't seem to really quite connect for them.
Right.
So I tried, but I was like, this isn't working.
Yeah, and I'd never really thought about that before. We're not just talking about, you know, Adam being tempted, you know, by his wife of many years. We're talking about his first crush, you know, his first love right there, you know, right there in front of him. Most beautiful thing he's ever seen.
And it's not like there's other options. All right.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, sorry, babe. It's been great. There's other fish in the sea. No, actually, no, there's not. There's nothing.
Did you get into this, Micah? How did the boys and girls in your class receive this?
We didn't really talk about like why Adam would have eaten the fruit. Your interpretation is interesting. I'm like trying to think if I agree. Like, are you saying that like he did because so that he would like end up with Eve? Like,
I'm playing with that. That's one of like, we don't have a lot, right?
Right.
The psychology of Adam kind of eludes us, other than that, like, just like we know Eve was deceived, we know Adam sinned with his eyes open. He knew what he was doing.
Right.
And we also know we have.
How do we know that?
Because later on, Paul's commentary on it is Eve was deceived, Adam was not.
Right.
And Paul therefore lays the blame at Adam's feet. He knew exactly what he was doing, and here we are.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, and one of a more simple possible, I do think it's likely that Adam, you know, wanted to stay with Eve or wanted to be in the same state as her. Another possibility is when you see if you're a teenager and one of your friends lights up a cigarette, you know, another teenage boy is going to go, "Ooh, cigarette. I want to try that. Why am I left out here?" You know?
Right. And she's still walking around, right? The early results look pretty encouraging.
Right.
She didn't drop dead.
Right.
She doesn't drop dead. It says there when they've both eaten, then their eyes are opened, but we're not there yet. The other thing we have to bounce off of is that we know what he should have done. Because we know what the second Adam did.
Right.
The second Adam brings his bride to God and says, "Take me instead."
Yeah.
Like, God was coming that evening. We know this. We know what he should have done. And we know he didn't. He wasn't thinking about that. So what's going on with him? And I don't know that we know for sure, but it's like, it's a thing to think through. What makes you sin with your eyes open?
Right. Okay, now they eat from the fruit of the tree, both of them, and then they're discovered to be naked. They found that they're naked, and they hide from each other and hide from God. You guys get into this?
Oh, yeah.
Micah, what'd you do with it?
We talked a lot about just the result of sin in the world, the result of the fact that the world is fallen, and how we see that in these verses. So we talked about how they hid, and they hid from God, and they hid from each other. And then there was shame, and there was blaming, and there was fear. And we talked about how, like, we still see that in the world. Like, I was like, how often have you guys gotten to in a fight with one of your friends, and instead of like trying to reconcile with them, you go and decide to not talk to them for like a few months, you know? That's like another example of this, like hiding, because I talked about how it says in the book, like hiding is a result of the fall. So, yeah.
Right. Tim, what did you do with it?
Similar. The thing that seemed to hook them was I said it were, you know, you ever have that moment where something happens beyond your control, but you're with a friend and things got a little too real. And now they know something about you that you really kind of wanted to keep to yourself.
Hmm.
And now you have to deal with that. And now you kind of don't want to see them, kind of don't want to talk to them, because they know this thing that that you wanted to keep hidden. And like nods all around. Everybody's been there by this age.
Right.
That's this.
Nice. What's the, what did you do with the fig leaves? This is their attempt to hide from each other. Did you explain that in metaphorical terms, or what does nakedness have to do with hiding from each other?
It's really... That's complicated.
Because you guys both went, you know, both went kind of psychological about it, which I think is totally appropriate. But for them, it was,
you know, it's also directly down, physical.
It's directly physical.
Yes. Well, and it's a little harder to, like, it's a little harder to hook that.
Right.
In people, because we've got, like, I'm wearing some pretty nice fig leaves here. We've gotten good at this. Uh-huh. We don't, like, you have situations every now and again where somebody walks in on you naked, but it's not tremendously common.
But everybody's had the dream, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true, actually. showing up at high school with no pants or whatever. Yeah. So it's a little harder to hook in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then also one of the things that makes me really cautious about trying to hook it is for a certain segment of the population, it's really easy to hook because they're coming from an abusive background and they know exactly what that's like.
Right.
And I'm not afraid to go there, but I don't want to evoke that in the middle of a Bible class full of middle schoolers.
Micah, did you talk about the nakedness or how that relates to the psychological nakedness, you might say?
A little bit, yeah. And we talked about, I mean, I mentioned how putting on fig leaves, they're now hiding from each other. And then we jumped into the psychological applications of that. Yeah.
Right. And then we get into the next part is hiding from God. How did you handle that, Micah?
We talked about how God comes walking in the garden and he's like, where are you guys? And Adam's like, sorry, we were hiding from you because we were scared of you. And kind of in the same conversation as the fig leaves.
Right.
And talked about, how there's now fear. Now that I think about it, I'm sure there's a lot of applications you could bring into it about being scared of God, especially after you sin. Like, there's a certain hiding from God that we are tempted to do a lot of times. So that could be something to bring into for sure.
Yeah, because it says that they were afraid because they were naked.
Right.
It doesn't directly talk about shame, or does it? I don't have my Bible open. It just talks more about fear than shame when it comes to God. But with the nakedness before each other, shame is... I probably shouldn't be talking about this without opening up to Genesis.
It doesn't directly... I mean, the mention of shame is at the end of chapter 2.
Right, so it's in the background.
And we're not ashamed. And that's like... That's the last thing we say before we launch into the fall story.
Yeah.
So you've got that hanging.
Uh-huh.
That's the last time. Like, this is a fairly tragic way of thinking, but that's the last time.
Right.
Like, human beings were genuinely comfortable in their skin and completely unashamed to be with each other. That's it right there at the end of chapter 2.
Yeah. So how does the fear of God figure into this for you, Tim, or did you draw that out?
I leaned more on the sin makes you stupid thing.
Okay.
And my guy, partly because one of my guys caught on instantly to the fact that fig leaves would make great camouflage.
I think I know who probably said that.
And so then it was like, yes. Okay. So Oh no, we did the one thing he told us not to do, and he's coming. Quick, jump behind a bush and hide from the maker of heaven and earth. He'll never find us there. And then they're not even good at it.
Right.
Adam, where are you? I'm over here. Clearly, Adam never played hide and seek as a kid. But it sin makes you dumb. He's the Lord of heaven and earth. He made the bush you're hiding behind. And you like, but they're not thinking about that. They're just thinking, oh, what have I done? I gotta hide.
Right.
And then, so where we touched that was from the other end of, does God know the answer to the questions he's asking? Of course he does. He's eliciting confession. See, he's seeking to rebuild the relationship. What should be happening, since we're deep in what shouldn't be happening already, but what should be happening at this point is Adam going, yo, God, over here, we got a problem. And I'm real sorry, but I need help here. And what is happening is, let's jump behind a bush. And then when called out on it, let's blame everybody but me. So sin makes him dumb and it makes him scared. And then it makes him weirdly smart about, like, Adam's never had to deal with this before. And he comes up with some pretty good blame shifting completely on the fly.
Oh.
Like, yeah. When I do it, like, I've been at this 46 years, okay? I should be good at it by now. Like, this is Adam's first time out. And there's only three players. It's a pretty simple situation. Well, that woman that you gave me, so I'm really the victim here, honestly. This is world-class stuff. He's oddly smart when it comes to blame shifting, but he thinks he can hide behind a bush. That's what sin does.
Yeah. Incredible. All right. Well, I think that takes us through the end. I thought this took us most of the way through three, but it looks like it only gets us through verse 13, really. So we'll have to pick up in 14 next time. And I suppose you'll probably cover 14 and all the way to the end of the chapter.
I think so, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't know the schedule in front of me.
All right. Well, any final comments on this lesson? All right. We will see you next time on Bible Class Debrief.